Lynn County Council of Governments for August 27th. It's nice to see you all here. We'll look for somebody to approve the minutes. You get a chance to read over the minutes. Anybody? Motion to approve?
Second.
Hey, any question or any changes? All in favor? Great. Okay, with no further ado, I'd like to introduce to those of you that don't know him, but also bring up the executive director of the Washington Public Ports Association. Eric has had this job. He can tell you, I'm going to round off and probably say a whole lot of things wrong, but Eric's been in charge for 3 or 4 years. He lives down in Olympia. He's got a, what's, is there a problem?
Kennedy has a hand up.
Oh,
she may have a problem or something.
Hang on, Kennedy, go ahead. Well, we're losing.
I don't have control, so if you want my video on, great. And now I can talk to you, so I'm unmuted. That's good too. I'm happy to be unseen but heard, either, however you guys prefer. But I can't make those changes.
Unseen but heard. That's.
But obviously, you're
back childhood memories.
You're able to put your hand up if you have any questions and communicate. And it's nice to have you here. Washington Public Ports Association has been a great advocacy group for port districts, and you know they tend to do a little more than most of those kind of groups. And I feel like there's a lot of great education you can get from them, but also some appropriate promotion and attempts at legislation. Oh, look, there's Eric's picture. Isn't that nice? He looks good there. Yeah, I'm going to. And he was good enough. Commissioner Johnson and I were talking once about a podcast or something that Eric had given. And I thought, well, it should be great to have him here. Eric has been here before when we had John Vizina from Washington State Ferries here. Eric was here with us too at that time, but that's enough further ado. No further ado here. Eric, lead her off. Let's go.
Just an emergency. Thank you. Thanks, Commissioner Gordon. And nice to see some friendly, familiar faces. You got it mostly right. I live in Olympia during legislative session, and the rest of the time I live in the front seat of my car, driving around to all of the port districts in the state. I'll show you a map that shows how extensive the reach of ports is in Washington, but really one of the fun things about my job is I feel like it's made me a citizen of Washington. Like, I just go to places and see people I know in cool, far-flung locales. Like, I was in Royal City, Washington a couple weeks ago, checking out the port of Royal Slope. More on them in a minute. I'm going to share my screen here in a second, but this appearance at your Council of Governments is proof, if nothing else, that you should never do a podcast. Well, and it's funny, Commissioner Johnson, that the Counties Association, the Ports Association, and the Cities Association regularly get together, especially during session, to talk about all the things that we agree on. And so Paul Jewell from the Counties Association was bugging me about this podcast, and I was just insistent I would never do it and stop asking, et cetera. And I finally, when I agreed, said, what are we going to talk about anyway? He said, we're going to talk about all the things that ports and counties disagree on. And I said, oh God, that's a horrible podcast. But it ended up going fine, I think. And it was fun to talk about some of the things we do agree on. I might need tech support here so I figure out how to actually present this. Let's see, present in Teams. Maybe that's how I do it. I know that's Zoom. Megan, I'm just struggling with the
upper left.
Oh, here we go.
There you go.
It's hidden by the, wow. Okay, so I did prepare a presentation. I want to say again, thanks for having me. Whidbey is the, look, where my mom was born in Whidbey. There's two, I was married on Whidbey. There's two ports on, she was born on the Naval Air Station, yeah. I was just telling the Oak Harbor folks, she moved away when she was two though. So she's, I tell people that, they assume it means I grew up, you know, running around on the beaches of Whidbey Island, and really not so much. But I do love it here. There's two great port districts here. Three great port districts here. Port of Mabana on Kameno in Island County, but not on Whidbey.
And it's 40 feet
of importance, right?
And I believe not a member of WPPA. Or Kurt said there are 75 public port districts in Washington. Only 68 of them are my members. So you can imagine those final seven are, yeah. And I think Mabana, some of them are very small and kind of go in and out as funds and other things dictate. But yeah, I love talking about ports. I do it all the time. I prepared a presentation, so I'll get through it quickly and we can do mostly questions to the extent that there are any. And I even wrote notes. So I'll talk a little bit about the history of port districts. I think it's instructive. Why they were formed and how they operate now are sort of a story of Washington state history. I'll talk about the powers port districts have, how those have evolved over time, funding sources that ports rely on to do the work that they do in their communities, a couple of our core areas of focus, transportation, economic development, industrial development, and environmental remediation, which you'll see go hand in hand, and then a couple of case studies. I did a lecture down in Vancouver that was much scarier than this because there were 100 people there. It was an hour long. And so I'm feeling much more chill here. But I did prepare a couple kind of case study examples for that that I thought were fun to look over. I'm going to go for like 20 minutes and then go to questions. How's that sound?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Cool. 75 port districts in Washington state. Like I said, nearly all of them are members of WPPA. There have actually been 81 formed, I learned through some research. A few have consolidated, a few have gone away. Kittitas County used to have a port district, doesn't have one anymore, has tried to reform one. I'll talk a little bit about how ports get formed as well. We are referred to sort of alternatively as special purpose districts, limited purpose governments, municipal corporations. I've heard ports referred to as public enterprise, which I like because we do have more of a profit motive or a business development motive than your average local government, but we are still a government entity. And like a lot of local governments, we have the powers that the legislature has given us. So we like to say we have an independent taxing authority and we're so independent and don't you dare tell us what to do, but we were created by the state. So we are a function of the state, which the legislators love to remind me. Created to retain public ownership of the waterfront and critical infrastructure. I'll talk about that more when I talk about the history, but as I like to say, public benefit from public resources. You know, my mom, who I always mention, I should probably tell her I'm referencing her. She said, aren't ports just a way that public governments give businesses money? And I said, what are you talking about? They're a way that governments attract business so that there's private investment in public resources. I think it's a really good relationship that we have with the private sector. And I'm still trying to convince Becky Fitch of that. hopefully she's not watching. Ports facilitate trade. The initial founding statute talked a lot about trade and commerce, and that has evolved to be really an economic development core mission. I'm working right now, fun project, a state trade strategy with a lot of partners. So we do really still focus on trade promotion and providing our exporters access to international markets and importers access to Washington's consumers and the rest of the country. The map here is available on our newly updated website. It shows you there are ports in 33 of 39 counties. The upper right hand corner is the port of Pend'Oreille. Don't call it Pend'Oreille. It's a tough place to get out of if you make that mistake. It's a interesting port district that tells a story of how ports come into being at certain times. It was created because there was a railroad serving a paper mill and other industrial facilities up there that was going to go out of business. The rail line was going to shut down. The community created the port essentially to operate the railroad. In fact, up until a recent rebrand, they pretty much went by the Pend'Oreille Valley Railroad, didn't call themselves the Port of Pend'Oreille so much. But a lot of ports are created with that sort of specific piece of infrastructure in mind. And I also think it's cool to show that map. For those who are wondering what the big, yeah. No, in fact, there's.
Okay, yeah. I get to stop him. Because he said something earlier that the port powers were sort of redefined, and I really feel like they were clarified.
Yeah.
So I think access to the water was directly due to lack of economic availability. In other words, there were railroads and there were also big businesses that owned the whole waterfront that reduced the trade for everybody, and that's what forced this 1911 act to get started. So I don't feel like it was redefined as much as it was just clarified. I mean, it was always based on giving the public the opportunity to have more free trade.
Yeah, transportation facilities. The initial founding statute says transportation facilities. It does say harbors and waterways, but the transportation facilities were sort of the initial nexus to the east side and the non-water-based ports. In the 50s, there was actually a law passed to clarify. So there's a portion of our statute that says ports not on bodies of water. So it is sort of an evolution or a clarification, as Kurt says. You're taking my slides. You want to do slide five? So this timeline's cool. It's a little cluttered, but that's maybe on purpose. You can see the sort of the bursts of formation. The 1911 Seattle Grays Harbor, Vancouver 1912, that's right after the statute was passed. And then I was going to mention that in Kitsap County, there are 12 port districts, actually. And a lot of them, you can't really even see on the map, but that cluster there, Kitsap County ports, 12, in part because the mosquito fleet was really one of the founding reasons for port districts. The waterborne commerce of the late 1920s, teens, early 20s, you see Tracyton, Owako Peninsula, Willapa Harbor, those are actually Pacific County, but those Kitsap County ports were largely to accept the steamer traffic, like in Coopville and Langley, that brought commerce around Puget Sound before the highway system. Some of those still exist as public port districts, even with just one dock, where they're, again, intended to retain public access to the water. The 50s, you'll see all these non-water ports, east side ports, Benton. Well, Benton's on the river, so is Clarkston. Columbia really is a great example of a non-water dependent port. They do have one marina facility on the Snake, but they have a co-working space where local vendors develop food products. They have a railroad that serves a couple of big grain businesses out there. So the 50s saw this boom of non-water dependent ports in part because ports have an industrial development district statute, which I'll talk about in a second, that gives them the ability to form industrial development corporations to attract businesses, really put more simply, develop business parks where manufacturing companies can locate. And the 50s saw a clarification of that statute, clarification, revision, maybe most importantly, the addition of eminent domain to the industrial development district statute. And that's what gave rise to a lot of the ports on the east side.
Question.
Go ahead.
It's 1990 or Dr. Slides?
Oh, 1988 actually was the last formed port district.
Can
And
go back.
Yeah.
And why did they stop? Are you going to get to that?
I will get to it. That's funny. Why Great View? Gosh, I should fact check myself. I've always been told Port of Grandview was the last port formed in 1988. I've been to Port of Great View. I think maybe it was renamed or changed. It's one of the five Mason County ports. I believe it was formed before 1990, but maybe something changed in 1990. I'm gonna look that up.
And speaking of renaming, just fun fact here, 1961, it wasn't the Port of South Whidbey, it was the Port of Langley. And Langley's port district was quite a bit smaller than the Port of South Whidbey. And then in the 70s, they went back out for another public vote and expanded almost to match the school district boundaries.
Yeah, and I'll get back to Grandview and to why they stopped, but I brought this book. If you all don't read History Link religiously, I do. History Link has done a history of almost all of our port districts. It's kind of a free encyclopedia for Washington. We partnered with them about 10 years ago to do a compendium of all those port histories. That's where I learned that, yeah, Port of Langley was formed. Again, think of the Ponderay Valley Railroad. Port of Langley was formed specifically to form Langley Harbor.
Actually, it was to build a dock where the Doghouse Tavern is, and they figured out that wasn't a good place. And later, when they expanded, they negotiated the harbor in language.
See, we're the city. Updating this, so we're gonna have to get you. We're gonna have to get, but yeah, the it was expanded in 68 and then again to basically get more tax base for that project. And it's one of only a few ports who have expanded. One of the roles of WPPA, which is cool, is I get calls from, I think it was Port of Everett, saying, are we the first port to try to expand its boundaries? But actually Langley, I think, was the first. Bremerton has expanded, a few others. And so the story of Port of Grandview is a funny one. Port of Grandview was formed as essentially a defensive measure. Port of Sunnyside, which we think of as a small but hardworking port, which excels beyond its resources, was doing so much work in the community out there in Yakima County that the people in Grandview were worried they would be consumed by the Port of Sunnyside. Mm-hmm. So they formed the Port of Grandview. And the reason that the campaign was successful, actually one of their current commissioners was like the city manager at the time. So you have firsthand real primary source knowledge. Their campaign was essentially keep our kids in Grandview. Like, we don't have any industries here. And so kids graduate high school and leave. And so it was really focused on like, let's create some local industries to keep people working here, which I think is a great selling point for a port. There have been attempts since then. So it's the last because they have to be created by a citizen vote. And it was the last successful creation. Asterisks on Grandview. I will get back to you about that specifically because you've just totally dented my credibility here right at the beginning of my presentation. I know, my own self-consciousness. Yeah.
Can I ask another question? The Port of Seattle includes the airport, the port of, where do airports fit into this?
Yeah. There are 37 airports, I believe, or 37 port districts that operate airports. So no, Port of Everett sits on the Painfield's board of directors, but that is a county facility that is operated by a private operator. But Bellingham International Airport is Port of Bellingham. Tri-Cities Airport is Port of Pasco. Pangborn Memorial Airport out in Wenatchee is the Chelan Douglas Regional Port Authority. And then you have a lot of these smaller general aviation airports that serve wildland firefighting, aviation education, a lot of life. We have life flight at a few of our port districts. Yeah, Pangborn. Yeah, exactly. And then Port of Friday Harbor operates Friday Harbor Airport, where there are commercial flights, just not the same, to the same level as the earlier commercial service airports I mentioned. But yeah, the Municipal Airports Act was enacted to give port districts the authority to operate airport facilities. And Port of Seattle, you mentioned, I mean, talking about taking over infrastructure after the war, the military basically said, you guys can have this back, the SeaTac Airport, and the county and the city declined to operate it, and the port stepped in to operate it. And that's how that came to pass. But yeah, it's a big part of our role is aviation Skagit facilities. Port of Skagit, is Skagit Regional Airport. Yeah. I think it was. Yeah, there's a lot of this conveyance of former military. I mean, even Port of Walla Walla, which is another of our commercial service airport operators, their whole industrial park out by the airport, which now has wine incubators and manufacturers, was all a military facility.
I also heard that the Port of Coopville was one of the original intentions was that it was going to take over the OLF from the Navy. Huh. They formed it thinking that that was going to be on offer from the Navy and they wanted to take it over. But then the Navy changed their mind and kept it.
Interesting. I'm going to look that. I bet you that's in here. I'm not as familiar on that history, but yeah, I mean, just thinking down the list, like Port of Benton in Benton County got thousands of acres of land from Hanford, from Department of Energy. So one of the ways that ports can acquire land is through that conveyance from the federal government. Yeah. I'm going to keep going, but I love being interrupted. I'm serious.
I love that.
I mean, this is, I hate presenting. I hate PowerPoints, as you can see by this horrific hypo up here. I love talking. So, public benefit for public resources. I will talk about the, that animating spirit, 1911. WPPA is a boring trade association in many ways. We strengthen the Washington port industry through collaboration, i.e. getting our members together to learn from each other. Advocacy, I am a registered lobbyist. Our office is across the street from the Capitol, and I do spend a lot of time asking legislators for things nicely. Research is in our enabling statute. WPPA is named in the RCW as the coordinating agency for port districts, and research and data collection on behalf of ports and trade is one of our named priorities. And then education. I joke that I run an event planning business with a lobbying firm on the side because we host 7 conferences a year. Kurt, it's crazy. But what we really do try to get our ports together, and it's everything from like new commissioners get an Open Public Meetings Act training right away at our new commissioners seminar, and then people who have been in port districts for 20 years learn about broadband deployment or new things ports are doing, you know, workforce training. Oh my God, when I started the Port of Seattle in 2016, we tried to tell people workforce development, training workers is a part of economic development. And everyone said, it's not in your statute, don't you dare. And now every port is trying to found, and I mean, I'm not saying Port of Seattle was the leader in that space. Often they're sort of the annoying person tapping on your shoulder, but it has become a sort of imperative for ports to invest in the next generation of workers. So our conferences are a place people go to say, hey, I hadn't thought of that before. Okay, I'm going to get really political here for a second, because the passage of the Port District Act is as a function of the progressive movement, but not really the progressive movement that you think of now. It was sort of the Teddy Roosevelt era progressives. The waterfront, like Commissioner Gordon mentioned, at the turn of the century was just completely dominated by industry. You've probably seen pictures of the Seattle waterfront. It's like 8 railroad tracks and a bunch of stinky steamships and warehouses and no public access. And as a function of the development of the West, cities like Seattle were offering huge swaths of land to timber companies, to railroads, to drive economic development, and hence cutting the public off from the water. When the state constitution was passed in 1889, the state designated the tidelands of Washington as public land. So you probably heard you can't own below the high tide line. That's in the state constitution. And the formation of port districts follows that same logic. In 1907, they tried to pass the Port District Act and failed. In 1909, they failed again. And in 1911, they succeeded. And then immediately the Port of Seattle and Port of Grays Harbor were formed. And they were formed, like I said, now for the fourth time, to facilitate public access to the water and public benefit from public resources. And here you see the initial powers: acquirement, construction, maintenance, regulation of harbor improvements and rail and water transfer facilities, seawalls, jetties, piers, wharves, and other harbor improvements, and then improvements for industrial and commercial purposes. And in that first founding statute, the power to collect taxes and issue bonds was included. Funny, I don't know if you know this, but the initial statute was $2 per thousand was what ports were allowed to collect. And that now it's capped at 45 cents. So if you think your taxes are high now, take it back to 1911. So then you've seen the timeline, but more big port formation happened up until the war. There was sort of a pause during the war, and then the East Side boom came after. So now we'll get into some of the nitty gritty, and I'm already way behind, but I'm just going to go through some of this stuff because it's important. Ports get revenue from a lot of different sources, not just their tax levies. I actually did the accounting on the way over here on the ferry. 10 ports don't collect a tax, 65 do. The tax rate is capped at 45 cents per 1,000 of assessed valuation. It's a property tax. And a couple of ports collect that full 45 cents. Most ports are in the sort of 10 to 25 range. And I won't say what Kurt's is unless he wants me to.
10 cents.
Yeah, I have 11 down here. So maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, 10 point. Yeah, maybe I rounded up. I didn't want to put you on the spot. And I couldn't find Coopville. So, Kurt's rounding down. Maybe. lease revenue is a huge portion of how ports get revenue. So that's everything from the leases that the Port of Seattle charges to SSA, the biggest terminal operating company in the world on the waterfront, or leases at Green Bank Farm or at the Port of South Whidbey. Freeland.
Fairground.
Yeah.
Harbor.
Yeah. I just completely blanked on everything about your port district. Sorry, Commissioner.
renting slips to
yeah yep yep yeah and the marinas are another, you know, I think I've quoted this number to the Oak Harbor folks before, but now I'm thinking it's 41 I think ports have public use marinas. That's another sort of, as we think about the uniting factors that a lot of ports do, airports and marinas are the most common. Real estate's also often quoted as the thing that every port does. Really interesting difference between the east side and the west side ports is almost all the ports on the west side lease land. Selling land is less common here because when it's water dependent, there's a real imperative to keep it in public ownership. Compared with on the east side, there is so much land that they often buy and sell. So like Port of Grandview is really an industrial real estate developer. They buy a chunk of land, they maybe clean it up if it had a gas station on it. They turn it into a industrial park, and then they sell it to a cold storage company that, you know, freezes potatoes and sends them out through the ports of Seattle and Tacoma. When I was sort of new in this job and I got to the east side, I kept hearing them talk about selling land. And I just asked the world's dumbest question, which is like, why do you sell land here? And they said, what do you mean? I'm like, why don't you lease it? And they said, because there's so much of it. Nobody would lease it. There's so much land out here that people want to buy it. So sometimes it is just that simple. Bonding is a huge part of what ports do. General obligation bonds backed by our tax levy, or revenue bonds backed by revenue from a specific source. I talked about our general tax levy. There's also the industrial development tax levy. Kirk could probably imagine this is the bullet that makes me the most nervous here, because there's a lot that's not understood about industrial development districts. In fact, we're having a whole session on it at our small ports conference, because Commissioner Gordon and I were talking at the commissioner's seminar about nobody really knowing what powers they have as an industrial development district. Ports can form an IDD without including a tax levy, but a tax levy that's equivalent to the general tax levy, 45 cents per 1,000, additional 45 cents per 1,000, can be attached to an industrial development district. It's collected over 6 years of taxation, but it can be spent over 20 years. And ports can do two. First one they can do with just a vote of the commission. Second one requires a vote of the residents of the port district. And if you're on the Pacific Ocean, weirdly enough, as of 1964, you can do a third one.
Really?
Yeah, but that has to also be voter approved. The other interesting thing about an IDD is that it's tied to a specific list of projects. So like Port of Coopville, for example, when it was passed, had to articulate exactly the projects on which it would be spent. Same in Port Townsend. I think those are the two that I'm most familiar with having happened recently. And, you know, I won't go into the politics of it, but I think that the experience, at least I'll speak on behalf of Port Townsend, since you're here, I won't say Coopville, but they felt like telling the voters exactly what their tax increase would fund was a good way of communicating the value of the vote. And that's maybe why it was successful. So being able to say, here's what we're going to build. Same like when the state passes a transportation budget, if you have a project list, you can justify a nickel gas tax increase. Whereas if it's just to fund the general transportation budget, it's more challenging. The other two major sources of funds on the levy taxing side, a dredging levy, never been done. Ports are authorized to collect a levy specifically for dredging. I don't know why it was passed into statute and then never actually taken advantage of. Maybe the Olympia was a difficult enough process that they didn't want to go back out to the voters, but I don't know the full history of that one. And then a local improvement district, like same as city and county authorities, you know, naming a list of projects funded by a specific set of property owners, ports have that authority as well. I put grants and loans here because this is often cited as one of the benefits of a port district. The skills of a port district is being good at getting grants and loans. It's true that many of our ports are successful year after year in securing loans from CURB. I don't know how many of you use CURB. It's an incredible tool, great partner. Not only do they offer loans at a screaming interest rate, they give you counseling on your projects. They're very supportive of projects as they go.
And grants.
And grants, yep, not just loan. Yeah, if your project's extra good, you get a grant. And then the Recreation and Conservation Office funds a lot of our marina projects, RCO. And then local and community projects in the capital budget. One thing that makes my job easier, although makes me slightly self-conscious, is that all of our ports have better relationships with their legislators than I have with their legislators. So they come to Olympia and they say, help us get capital budget money. And I say, do it yourself. You're better at it than I am. But really, typically the ports have positive relationships with their local legislators and have been successful in getting money in the capital budget. So that's another funding source. So Formation 101, there you see the Port of Grandview's initial logo. The process is, as you might imagine, citizen-led. A group of petitioners representing at least 10% of a proposed district go to a county and ask that it be put on the ballot. The area in question must have an assessed valuation of at least 150 million. The petition that's submitted to the county describes the boundaries, selects whether three or five commissioners, that is optional in most circumstances, describes which districts would be used if those are identified, and then names the port. The commissioners may be elected at the same election or at the next election. And that is often, like in Yakima County, for example, in 2002, there was a slate of commissioners who ran and were elected, but the port was not formed. Yakima County was defeated in 2002 and in 1988, same year Grandview was on the ballot. Kittitas County was actually unsuccessful more recently, but I couldn't find the numbers. Spokane County is an interesting one. Right now, in statute, you cannot form a less than countywide port district in a county with no port district. If you're in a county that already has port districts, you can form a less than countywide.
Wow.
Yeah, think about it. Sorry, there's probably a better way to say that. But Spokane was interested enough in forming a port district that about in 2016, the legislature passed a law allowing formation of a less than countywide port district for a certain number of years. And it was such a challenging political environment in Spokane that it never even made it to the ballot, and that allowance sunsetted. So once again, it's not allowed. And I haven't heard much out of Spokane since then. Although every time I go out there, I run into somebody from that process and they say, we're thinking about it again. They have a really cool public facilities district out there that's sort of developing land for industrial purposes like a port would do. So they have a functional equivalent without taxing authority, but they are working on industrial development. And it really is, I get asked this often. I spoke to the Okanagan County folks about forming a port. They were interested. Kittitas County is, like I said, calling me up to ask again. So it still is discussed, but it has not been successful since the late 80s.
There's a lot of people in this room, including myself, who are really interested in a port of North Whidbey or Port of Oak Harbor, whatever they want to call it. What would be would your organization help those people in work the work that they need to do to set that up?
Yeah, I hope I've been clear with about this in the conversations we've had to this point. We would help from an educational capacity as much as we can. We wouldn't advocate for it, right? Like I'm in the business of talking about all the great things a port can do in its community, but I'm not in the business of local political advocacy. So it would be purely educational. And I think I shared with some of you, and I was at the Oak Harbor Council meeting. I was my friend Senator was always like, wow, you're really trying to talk them into forming a port. I'm like, no, I was just giving information about how great a port is. And I wish he was listening because I would say that over and over again. I mean, I think ports do incredible things in their communities. And any questions I can answer for you or others from Oak Harbor about what that would look like, I would be happy to do that. And the whole organization. And our executive board has met with folks interested as well. So if there were electeds who wanted to have an elected to elected meeting, I could also help arrange
I'm a
that.
constituent of Kurtz, but as a county commissioner, I'm really interested in North Whidbey having a board.
I'm happy to answer questions about that. And hopefully I've provided resources to the Oak Harbor folks as I can.
There was an effort to form a port of Camino several years ago. It was when Senator Haugen was in the
Oh, interesting.
Senate, and I don't even know if it got to the ballot. There was a group of folks who organized that several times in order to give Camino a bigger seat at the table, like at IRTPO and other things. It never passed. There was two efforts. It never happened.
When this is like
You
the
know,
early 90s, if yeah.
I think it's in the 80s,
Oh,
but
okay.
I would have to ask Randy Hagel because he was a big leader behind that effort.
Would there be a way to expand the Port of Mabana?
Yeah, it was to expand the Port of Mabana, which is actually, ironically, quite large part of South Camino. Remember when we were having to appoint,
Yes, find a commissioner to serve
right?
on the Port of Mabana.
And so it was to fill the whole thing. And it was for economic development reasons because of being able then to access CURB and access other grant funding for economic development. And it was for the link to our transportation planning. And if you asked Mary Margaret today, she would still tell you it was a good idea.
You mentioned transportation planning. I think that's one. We've been in a discussion recently about government planning with Department of Commerce leading this conversation. And I've been impressed that every port I've talked to sits on their RTPO or has some view into that process. And that's an important access to point to federal funding. So it's not just programs like CURB. There are these federal grant or pass-through programs that help ports access. Enlargement / annexation is a port statutory authority as well. In fact, Port of Everett just last year attempted to expand its boundaries. It was a really instructive example of the communications campaign that's necessary because I went up to meetings, again, in an educational capacity. I was not up there lobbying for the passage. I was up there answering questions about what ports do, why a port. And the questions were so foundational that I think Everett and I discovered that really you're starting from almost zero. Ports have for a long time existed in such an obscure local government capacity that most people don't think about what they do. Most people don't even associate SeaTac Airport with Port of Seattle, which is sometimes a good thing. But it's really an educational and communications effort.
And when we talk about protecting local airports and the importance of that, and you hear it in Eastern Washington from our colleagues around wildfire, it's not on your list, but CARB helps support and protect those local airports that are part of ports.
Yeah, CARB is, I didn't note it actually. It's maybe because it's so new. It's basically based on the concept of CURB, but for airports. And a lot of our ports have accessed it. And are you on the board or something? Oh, okay. I thought so. I'm glad I said nice things about Janae. Make sure to tell her.
Everybody said things about
Janae. The smaller airports are funny. They have this reputation. People think, oh, this is just, people with private planes flying in and out to visit their neighbors. But really, they serve a wildland firefighting, life flight, a access to transportation in far-flung communities. These are just the evolution of powers, industrial development districts, leasing and selling property, 1959 toll bridges and toll tunnels, not often utilized. Park and recreation facilities I put in here because a lot of ports do take that public access to public resources mission seriously and provide recreation opportunities. So like Port of Calama, we always cite as an example of this. They have done an amazing job redeveloping the riverfront there, and they've done it using the revenue that they get from a big, stinky industrial facility. It doesn't actually smell bad. I'm just making a point, and the community there sees the exact value proposition. They see the grain ships using that for private economic development, and then they see the public benefit that it provides right there on the water. And then, of course, in 1985, economic development programs explicitly authorized. It was being done before then. Pollution control facilities and environmental. I have a slide on environmental, but we don't need to get to it. But cool example out in Sunnyside. Derigold sends its wastewater to the Port of Sunnyside's wastewater treatment facility. Similarly, Mattawa, they treat wastewater from wine grape crushing. So two relatively lesser known functions that serve the agricultural communities out there in central and eastern Washington. The main thing I'm going to point to here on the economic development slide is tourism promotion. So tourism was explicitly added in 2009. A lot of ports sit on their local tourism boards. Again, tourism grants are something Port of Seattle, Chelan Douglas Regional Port have both done to drive visitors to their regions. And it is, especially for some of our smaller ports, it's core to what they do. Port of Coopville's wharf celebration I went to earlier this year, and it was just an awesome example of how ports bring folks together and local vendors sell products. And, we went and spent money that we wouldn't have otherwise at the dog food store right down there. So it's a really good example. I try to live that mantra of spending money in port communities as much as I can.
Well, I can ask during question time. We can go back.
Let's just do question time now.
Good now, yeah.
So the relation on the last slide where it's top here. Nope, sorry. I was on the economic one. This is the part that I was most interested in.
And sorry, there's a lag here. So
Okay. What is the relationship between the roles and responsibilities of ports and an economic development council?
Like an EDC?
Yeah.
Yeah, great question. And I hate sounding like a lawyer and saying it depends, but really it's sort of community to community. So seven ports serve as the ADOs, the associate development organizations in their communities that get funding from the state for business recruitment. And that's often a function of the EDC. So that's a partnership. Ports, almost all ports have a member on their local EDC. So like Cowlitz EDC has somebody from Port of Longview and Port of Kalama.
No, we don't. Excuse me.
Oh,
we don't. They.
He didn't cue me up for this.
No. I'm sorry. She was asking.
No, I know.
I wasn't correcting you.
We have an EDC. I was just wondering.
We have an EDC, and we used to have an invited seat. Huh. And I even participated. Did they stop that?
I don't believe we have a seat on. We don't participate in this much.
We used to have a specific seat that we appointed one of our commissioners to attend, and they actually, the last time we tried with Ed Halloran, who's passed away, they wouldn't let us put somebody else on the seat.
Everyone and their uncle serves on the
committee. Whatever.
Not kidding.
These are not relatives, apparently. So this was partly where when I was listening to the podcast, this was really the part of the conversation that I was most interested in and kind of excited about was, there was something that was said about how ports provide, they do these economic development plans, however many years. I've not ever seen a plan. So we're doing our comp plan. It has an economic development element. I'm like, why is this information not in our element? Then I was like, well, we have the EDC doing all these plans, but if the ports are doing these plans and they're supposed to be these economic engines for counties, why are we not more reliant on ports to start driving some of these conversations? We've done a SEDS. Ports were participatory, but not necessarily the drivers of the SEDS. But the way I understood the podcast, which is partly where I wanted to clarify, is that the ports are designed to be these kind of economic engines within counties. And yet in all of our economic conversations, they're not participatory, or we are not depending on their information to form all of our economic plans. And that was one of the things where I was like, well, wait a second, I maybe don't know what a port does, right? Or can do. I mean, I know kind of what it does, but I guess I was just kind of curious about that intersection with local governments and EDCs and how you pull that economic voice into your bigger structure. Because if they're doing it, why are we not getting it?
Yeah.
Comment about it. I think partly it might be the way that it's structured in Island County, where part of the big economic engine is Oak Harbor, and they're not one of the ports. So if the ports were driving the whole economic conversation of the whole county, that might not be appropriate as it would if there was a countywide port.
Fair. That's fair.
I totally agree with that. But it isn't like we don't provide some information. I mean, we had a consultant come in and do a second in 15 years that I've been there. This is the second time we had an economic study done on the South End, and came up with quite a detailed report that's accessible to any of you.
No, I've seen that.
And since I've been on Council of Governments, I've been promoting the economic element for your comp plan. So, and every 6 years we redo our scheme. So it's all available, but it's, to his point, it's very South Whidbey specific, what we've created.
I'm not being critical of ports. I'm not being critical of anything. It was just new information. And I thought you had said something that there's this economic report that ports were supposed to do every couple of years. And I was like, we don't get updates on that. I've never known to ask for it. I'm sure it's going somewhere. It's never been presented.
You're not being critical. You're observing something that I observe as I go around, which is that it's different everywhere. Like the sharing of economic development planning really is community to community. So ports have a comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements, even if they don't have a harbor, that's what it's called, that they update every 6 years, four, two, kind of depends on acquisition of new facilities or, and that is their planning document. And then every year when they adopt a capital budget, they'll update it if there's a capital plan. So I say that because I've seen a lot of instances where that's the point where the city gets involved, or like a city, if the city has an economic development division, they'll be involved in that updating of the comp scheme. If the city has a comp planning process, they'll invite the port in. That's in Kitsap County, where I was mentioning a lot of our smaller ports in Kitsap County sit on the comp planning committee. And so it really is, it's an interesting observation. It's kind of different everywhere. Oftentimes it is changes with a person. A person leaves an economic development committee and there's not another person appointed beyond them. And then that sort of changes the relationship for the next few years. There is a current discussion going on about formalizing outreach from counties to, like, one of the things this Department of Commerce group I sit on is looking at is, should counties be required to reach out to special purpose districts, not just ports, hospital districts, et cetera, when they're doing comp planning? One thing we have said back to them is you shouldn't require that because it's already happening, but it isn't happening in every community, as you observe. So there is maybe an argument for formalization. The EDC, just to the broader question, the EDC often gives out 0.09 funding, and so ports sit on the groups that allocate 0.09. Do you
Give out our own 0.09?
Do you? Okay, county. From the county. Okay, interesting. Yeah.
The EDC is the recipient of 0.09 funding in order to function.
Interesting.
But we don't let them give it out.
Okay. I think it's in.
Skagit.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah, and then
some control issues with the commissioners in this county.
Are there any of them here in the room?
we have a controlling structure. I was just asking what struck me, and again, like, I'm very apologetic about this, but I've always kind of been like, well, you know, Coopville, little chaos most of the time, and then Kurt. And Kurt's always asking for stuff. So I've, like, made the Port of South.
And it's worked. I mean,
I've made the Port of South Whidbey about Kurt.
Yeah.
I've made Coopville about funding chaos. And that has kind of been my port impression. And then I listened to this and I was like, wait a second. This would make a lot of sense about, there's continually conversation at the county about economic development, and we don't really do it.
Shouldn't be our job.
We don't do it, but we want to know, and people ask us about how we're growing the economy, but we're not getting, so we formed the SEDS group, and we've done all these different things. And this was like the first time that I really dialed in on the fact that, oh, wait a second, ports are this government mechanism to do economic development and growth. And how do you pull that into the bigger structure?
You did more than help Ford and the said. You made that part of your 0.09 fund.
Yes, right.
I mean, you guys utilized it when it came to your economic development functions.
Right. But I was struck by the fact that here we have these structural voices built into government to talk about economic development, and yet we're continually forming committees or doing outreach or trying to get information about how we do economic development. And it's a fair point that it's very South Whidbey centric. It's not Oak Harbor centric. It's not Camino centric, but it also is this formalized mechanism to get economic development feedback. And mostly I wanted you to come just to make sure that was right, because I was like, well, if that's true, then we need to strengthen that feedback loop a little bit more. So when we do council of governments and different things, and we talk about economic development, that's not necessarily a county-led conversation. That is where we're trying to get feedback from other government entities that are doing this work. And then we incorporate that into our stuff. We don't have to do it ourselves, but we don't do it.
You know, I think I might've said this on the podcast. I haven't listened to that podcast, by the way. My in-laws listened to it. I said it to them as kind of a joke, and then I listened to the whole thing. I think what I said then, and I'll say now, is that there's sort of three or maybe more, but I'll point out three ways it could work. There's sometimes, like Paul and I were talking about, there's this perception that counties and ports don't get along, or that cities and ports have this adversarial relationship. What I've observed is it because ports are lucky that we don't have to do general purpose government things. General purpose governments are overwhelmed by the demands on general purpose government and often don't have time to prioritize economic development. So there's sometimes where there it's not necessarily adversarial, but it's a lack of communication because the general purpose government is doing what it's charged with and the special purpose district is off recruiting businesses or developing harbors. Then there's the sort of other end of the spectrum where a county or a city just fully sort of devolves its economic development function to a port and say, we don't do that, you do that. And then the third, and where I think it works best, is when both are involved. The county or the city doesn't fully devolve its responsibilities for economic development to the port, but it allows the port to be a leader or a co-leader on economic development, but it stays involved. I think that's where, and so maybe that's my plug for you all integrating the ports more into economic development planning, because they are, like you said, they are doing their own planning. And so it could be as simple as just like an integration of those two planning conversations. But yeah, I think the best examples are where there is just total, like I think you mentioned Skagit. I think Skagit County has very well integrated sort of economic development planning between the port and the county and plenty of others. That's just a near at hand example.
That's a countywide port.
That's right. That's part of the difference, because that's a countywide port.
It'd be easier to be an ADO if you were a countywide port too. So that, you know.
Quite countywide. This is a weird one. Because Anacortes has a little chunk of Skagit County.
But to his point.
And it's not far eastern Skagit, so you're right.
Yeah.
I don't think it includes least.
But probably is correct in saying that a countywide port is more likely to have that close. And like in Kitsap County, it'd be hard to integrate 12 port plans with the county economic development plan. And you're not the first county commissioner to, I've heard from county commissioners who said, we want to know more about what the ports are doing. And I've heard from ports who've said, hey, we want to be more involved in what the counties are doing. So I think often it really is just a function of conversation between electeds.
Yeah, because sometimes ports go out on their own and they oppose things like utility taxes, which are in the best interests of counties. And I don't understand why they would do that.
I'm not going to comment on that. I'll just say that you said Coopville to you is chaos. I go to Green Bank Farm in the morning to walk my dog. It's like the most peaceful place on earth. And I would say that even if you weren't here.
They do good things. It's financial chaos. Used to be.
No, Pierce County isn't doing that.
Are they?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm hearing from other counties that the inability for counties to have utility revenue is part of what's happening, and as I'm hearing from other county commissioners, that is a hindrance to our ability to
live. Eric, come on now. It's a problem.
You know, come to think of it, I think WBBA did oppose the county utility tax at the legislature this session.
They did.
Yeah. I think we did.
And we come together, and I will tell you that.
We also opposed the county treasurer new fees. Okay. Yeah, sorry.
It's all right. Fine.
Since we're just being so open with each other, is this how you thought this would go, Commissioner Gordon?
No, this is.
I already had one.
We talked about the fact that we might get a little sidetracked during this conversation.
I think this is extremely productive conversation, so I'm having a blast. Should I keep going?
We can go
to the end.
Hang on a second. I'll ask you members of COG, who are also all the members of IRTPO, if this pushes IRTPO back 10 minutes, is it a big deal? Do we need to start that right on time at 10?
No. We don't have much going on with IRTPO.
Okay.
We just need to communicate.
Thank you. Go ahead, Eric. Okay. Let's wrap her up.
Transportation infrastructure, you know, enough said. I think that the key thing that I like to point out on this slide is that in most cases, ports are funding projects when they're seeking state and federal partnerships. So we come to the state or to the federal government and say, we have put X number of dollars into a public project. We need your partnership, or as we often describe it, like we build our infrastructure, you build the infrastructure that leads up to our infrastructure. So we need state partnerships. So we're always at the Transportation Committee advocating for the transportation budget. And then things like the interstate bridge. It's one of the biggest freight bottlenecks in the entire country. We need a new bridge, and the ports of Vancouver, Kalama, Longview, et cetera, all the ports in that area are very involved in that conversation. 37 airports, 7 of the state's 12 commercial service airports. We talked about that. I won't belabor it. A lot of federal funding for airports that are part of the National Priority Integrated Air System. Smaller general aviation airports often don't have access to that funding. And so one thing we've talked about with Oak Harbor, with others, is that more marinas and airports don't tend to make money. Only our biggest public marinas generate revenue. Most others are a public amenity that is funded in part by a port's tax levy.
Safety.
Yeah.
Both in terms of an emergency and in terms of our marine highways, if there's an incident that happens.
I completely agree. I was at Port of Hoodsport down on Hood Canal. It's among other things, I mean, Hood Canal, beautiful public waterway. That's one of the only public docks on that stretch of Hood Canal. It's a lot of private houses, private docks. And I was talking to a community member there whose wife was having a medical procedure, and they ended up bringing a sheriff's boat to the dock there because it was a quicker way to get her out of there. So there is a huge public safety and access aspect.
Quickly, the other side of that is that ports have to choose the things that they're going to invest the public's money in. And if you take on a project that doesn't bring more revenue back than the expense that you're putting out, like in the case of the Port of Bellingham, your public is basically subsidizing the airport. So you have to be really careful about these acquisitions because you have very limited places that you can put the federal money, and then they restrict what you can do on the property. So the only way you really make money is around the periphery, and you have to have a great plan for that. There have been more than one port commissioner seminars where I've talked to the commissioners and they've said this is a money losing operation. So yep, as much as it'd be good, somebody has to help with the financing, and should it be local? So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
Do ports have their own risk pool? How do you insure yourself?
Yeah, we're through the same one as I think like your schools are. Well, what's it called?
Well, there's the Washington County's Insurance Fund, which some ports use. There's a lot of ports are insured through Enduris.
We're through Enduris.
I think 50 plus ports are insured through Enduris.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. We're going to
keep going. I was going to mention the concessionaire aspect, less specifically to marinas, but more at airports. When I worked at Port of Seattle, people would say, why do you charge money for cabs to pick up here? Why do you charge for Uber and Lyft? It's a public facility, so a private entity making a profit at a public facility has to pay a concession charge to keep the public infrastructure up to speed. It's often sort of misunderstood. Why is the Port of Seattle trying to make money at the airport? And I would say it's more an issue that the Port of Seattle is trying to generate revenue to fund the continued operation of the airport. Skip the slide. Oh, here we go. I think environmental cleanup is one of the coolest things ports do. I don't know how directly relevant it is, maybe in Island County, but Port of Tacoma just recently told me there's no clean dirt in Tacoma, so the port is buying contaminated properties to clean them up. The Model Toxic Control Act grant program from the state government plus EPA brownfields grants are a major source of funding for ports. The Port of Bellingham pictured here is maybe the best, most shining example of a contaminated mill facility on a beautiful downtown waterfront that has been returned to public use and public benefit through the port's investment and the state's investment. Tacoma, huge cleanups on the waterfront there. Everett is undertaking one right now. And actually, Norton Terminal in Everett just reopened for container traffic, giving the port a ton of more space to support the trade function. And that used to be a contaminated dock. So the environmental cleanup element's huge. The case studies are interesting for one reason, because I do have a consolidated port on here. I like to put the Wekiakum port because, again, it was really funded at, or founded to create the Elokim & Slough Marina. Now it has a big public area that's rented out for weddings and family reunions. It has a brewery down on the docks, and it still has a big recreational and commercial fishing function. Highly recommend it. Wekiakum Port District 1 was founded in 1958, and then Wekiakum Port District 2 was founded in 1966, right down the road. So they're relatively different. Wekiakum Port District Number 2 operates a big public park and campground. You know what? That is so important.
My computer died. Your computer died.
Ha! See, I told you I brought this for a reason. But yeah.
1 second. I know we're running out of time, and I look through your last few slides, but I had a kind of diverging question.
No, that's great. It was perfect. That was
kind
perfect.
Of continuing on our previous conversation, and with the Oak Harbor people here, hearing about them wanting to form a new port or potentially looking into these options, I kind of was thinking, well, there's a lot of things there. Everything's on the table here. So this is a, I guess I just wanted to get your feel for the difference between a county that has several small ports and how functional that is versus a county that just has one large port. Because some of the options that come into my head are like, maybe we could just have one port or one port on Whidbey, or just rather than I'm not advocating for anything. I want to get some information from you about what that is. That a good idea or a bad idea or what?
You know, the good thing is that I can only speak what's on my mind. I mean, consolidation is challenging. Consolidation requires the basically consent of all the commissioners. I say that with one example in mind. Port of Wind River and Port of North Bonneville consolidated to form Port Escamania in the 70s. And it was really because one of those ports had basically ceased meeting. The commissioners there were still elected and essentially approached the other port and said, we think we should get together and consolidate. The Chelan-Douglas Regional Port, which is a functional consolidation, they still have two separate commissions, but they have one staff, one executive director, you know, one bank account. That was done over a number of years because of willingness from both commissions. And the Northwest Seaport Alliance is maybe the biggest example. Ports of Seattle and Tacoma consolidated their container operations into one business line to put decades of ruinous competition behind them. So all three examples were willingness from both sets of commissioners. As far as the benefit to one county versus you know, several smaller ones, I think you could make arguments in both directions. Like we say, and we mean, and we see everywhere we go that ports are different in every community. Some ports buy land, some ports lease land, some ports collect a tax, some don't. And so having multiple ports in a county gives you the ability to be flexible based on your specific community. Kitsap County's 12 ports, I think I could say, learn a lot from each other. They get together quarterly for an all ports meeting and they invite speakers. They just had somebody from the new RT or from the new person at the EDC actually, I think, joined their last meeting. So I think they see benefit from being separate, but being very closely coordinated, learning from each other. I know your commissioners spend time together too. So I mean, I'm not dodging your question. I'm answering it genuinely. It's kind of just depends on where you are. Maybe I could see the value.
One thing I heard you say is that, so to form a new port, it's up to the voters of that district.
Yeah.
But to change the boundaries or merge ports, it's up to the elected commissioners of the existing ports, not necessarily the voters of those districts, except that they elect the commissioners.
Except that the changing boundaries part. So if you get into changing boundaries, so yeah, I think, and this is where like, I'm just wish I had an attorney present. I don't know.
Well, just be specific.
I believe that consolidating two ports. Well, I'm getting there in a second, but I think without changing boundaries, it's true that two ports could consolidate just with the commission's consent. Like Chelan-Douglas Regional Port did not go to the voters. That was a decision made by the commissioners. Enlargement is an annexation process. And so whatever it tried to do was add land and voters, and the only people for port districts, it's I think different from cities, the only people who get to vote on a boundary enlargement are the new residents. So the people who are currently paying taxes to a port and maybe seeing value from it don't get to say, hey, this is great. Only the people who are about to have a new line on their property tax bill are the ones who get to vote, and you can imagine that that's challenging.
That was very helpful.
You got right to the heart of the matter. I mean, it's I don't need to go through the rest of the case studies. You have them here. I would love to take any other questions, but I know the value of RTPO, so I don't want to stand in the way of that.
No, this is really good. It's appropriate timing, and the other piece is the specifics. I didn't know the specifics of the expansion. The voters were all only the people that were going to be included in the future. And as we all know, it didn't work in Everett. It would be an interesting, somebody really have to promote the thing to make it worse.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to get their take on it. I wouldn't say it didn't work. I'd say it's a work in progress. I think it's a communications campaign. And,
And I think we always agree that sometimes it takes two or three efforts to make something a positive vote. If you're saying it didn't work, I mean, it wasn't a positive vote.
And I think the one thing that they took away, like we mentioned with IDDs, is that you need to be able to describe the value proposition in a really concrete, tangible way. Like, here is what you would get for your...
You only need to do that for the voted one.
Right, for the voted one.
The first one, you don't have to justify anything, but the Port of Coupeville did... and did a good job of that and got a lot of positive feedback, and it sounds like that's why they went ahead with it. But the fact of the matter is, and you all need to know that the first IDD is simply it just takes a vote of the commissioners.
Yep.
And they can get up to 45 cents a thousand for 6 years or the equivalent of, and that can be extended out over 20 years. So these are tools that that Eric didn't have to elaborate on, but it's a fact that's what the Port of Coupeville has done, and you haven't taken. I'm going to take a little more time with this. You haven't taken the full amount that you can take yet, or I mean, is it so much per year over 6 years?
We were up here five.
Five of collection.
I think there's one more year of collection, so we could, and each year we get to vote on the level that we take, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's not decided yet, but I think so far we've been taking
the maximum. And that change happened since I've been a commissioner. It was 6 years, you know, 45 cents a thousand, and that was it. And then it got extended where you could take portions of it out over 20. You don't have to take it all.
Yeah, but we keep it all separate bank account, and then for every expense we do, we have to allocate it to one or the other. And so we've been using it to majorly upgrade and repair all our facilities and put us in a better state. Till when it's gone, we won't have all that preventative.
And just so you know, there's still a base levy. This has nothing to do with it. So if they have a base levy, you don't have to go back to the voters for your...
Yeah, we continue to get our regular levy. The IDD is a shorter term on top of that to use for specific projects.
It doesn't replace it.
Thank you.
It's an additional specific 45 cents a thousand. And by that, they mean that they set a number with that 45 cents, and over time, that number sticks.
Yeah.
So you don't have 45 cents, you have 58 cents. 36 cents by year.
Anyway. Well, this is a great place to end. It's something we worked with the counties on. The 1% property tax lid affects all local governments, and ports are butting up against that. And so I'm not saying that's why Coupeville did an IDD, but it is why we're all seeing our purchasing power go down relative to the cost of everything. And we did work with cities and counties and almost got there with the lid lift legislation. You know, when South Whidbey, I think, took the fairgrounds, you went for a levy increase to the voters, because anything over that 1%, we have to go back to the voters for. So it's a local government shared challenge. Thank you for having me. I've taken so much time, but I'm so happy to be here.
This is really good. Does anybody have any more questions? I want to give you all the time you need. Eric's been great and always love having him. He's a fan of Whidbey. He comes up here a few times a year, don't you?
And I always call Kurt.
Yeah, right. After your golf game,
in case I run into
walk the dogs or whatever. we get great support from and Jack Ng, my fellow commissioner, is on.
He's like my vice president on my
Washington Public Ports board. He'll next year be their president.
Yeah.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We got a couple little things, and then we're gonna move in and let this go to the IRTPO. A couple things that I want. What?
Now we're done.
Well, I can't even talk about what meetings might be canceled.
You can talk about that.
Can I do that? And we'll leave the rest of it. Let's talk about, because
Megan puts this on our, anyway, we should talk. I thought the last discussion that we had about whether or not we'd have a council of governance meeting had to do with the availability of time and whether or not IRTPO was needing a meeting that same time. So to me, we were gonna kind of leave it loose and call them as needed. I need feedback as to who wants to have a meeting in September or October, or should this just be done, you know, because you got to set up presentations. It was great. I had Eric a month in advance, so you got those things to consider. So at least we got to have a little discussion about whether, thanks a lot, Eric, whether we're going to see, have a meeting next month or October. What do you think?
Well, so I apologize. There was something that happened this week, last week. I don't remember. I'm talking to my colleagues here. I said, well, we need to talk about that at the COG.
It's emergency management.
Emergency management. That's
but
what
I
it
think
was.
We should maybe wait a minute on that one. But maybe we should wait a minute.
Maybe later, though, this year, yeah. We could have a meeting to do that.
Also, we could present the jail needs assessment. I don't know that the ports are necessarily interested, but I don't know that you're not. But I know every municipality probably wants to see the jail needs assessment. Although if I were a taxing authority, I'd like to see the jail needs assessment if I was considering any taxes, because once that jail goes out there, there will be zero voter appetite for if we do the jail there, it will be a thing. So maybe we want to see it. And also we would be interested in feedback.
Okay. All of those things are great. I don't think anything is going to be specific to any one of us. And I think we all need, and this is our chance to weigh in and find out what other things. So nothing has to be specific to the ports or the county for that example. So if you have an idea of which ones you want to do, are you saying you'd like to continue to have meetings? We usually don't have one around Thanksgiving.
I think we should have September. And I think two legislative priorities I thought we were going to be discussing today. We're postponing that. We all have timelines that we need to.
Can we postpone that and not be in an emergency in September?
Yeah.
Is that too late?
We're talking about doing a September meeting. I think that could be on that
topic.
Sure. But we don't set legislative priorities as a cap.
No. But it's understanding what everybody's doing.
There's a discussion about.
Fair
point. In the last discussions that we had about that, we talked about trying to have a little more of a unified voice so that, you know, we don't have to pick, but at least we can discuss what our top priorities are. And if the legislature's hearing that from everybody, and two or three, it might be beneficial. That was a conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Agree.
All right, so that'll happen next month. We'll have a meeting in September. I'll discuss, we'll figure out who we're going to have as a presentation, and we'll let you know. And then we'll just leave the rest of it open. We might have October, November, might not have. Right, it's usually around Thanksgiving.
I think Jill's right about giving, it's a pretty big initiative to look at our law and justice work.
Okay.
And all of the municipalities and counties are facing unique challenges with law and justice. So I think to have a meeting in September and October so that we can include both topics.
Sorry, we were sidebar. I was saying maybe Travis.
September and October.
Okay.
All right. So let's just tentatively say we're going to have a September and October meeting.
Okay. Yeah. We cancel that one every year.
Okay. With that being said, this meeting's adjourned.
Okay, so there's people.